Public Safety Finance Division will come to order. Members, we have two bills on the agenda today.
Morning.
First of all, I would like a motion to approve the minutes for Thursday, March 19th.
So moved.
Representative Ward moves the minutes of March 19th. Are there any questions? All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Then Representative Haas is first on the agenda. Representative Haas. Welcome to the committee. Would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 1523. And what direction should we be moving this in, Mr. Chair?
Well, I believe, Mr. Haas, we would just be laying it over for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Committee bill.
That's what I would like to do, Mr. Chair. I can officially go on record now in House File 1523 that I don't feel that I have been thoroughly beaten on this subject yet. So I have a couple rounds to go.
Just start right on me. Just start right on me.
If you recall, in 2005, we tried to amend this bill a little bit. And this is a little bit different approach. We're not going to the book and relief like the bath in the Mississippi by my house. This is just for the people that they are booking and keeping. And we recommended in this bill that the counties be able to set the fee. That's probably the controversial section of that. And I'm open to amendments to that, just setting the factor. One of the things that we often do is that we think the world is just like the area that we're living in. And it's not. And in Stearns County, we have a college town, and booking is a big activity. And so they can tie an evening up pretty good. I think in 2005, we booked close to 8,000 people in our county jail. And most of those, a very small percent of those, were not charged. In some of the areas, they have an outlandish catch and release where they're booking and letting them off in the morning. That's not true in my county. I have a testifier here this morning that has been around this system for quite a while, and he would like to give some testimony. May I have him introduce himself?
Absolutely. Mr. Tuma, please introduce yourself for the record.
And members, my name is John Tuma. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Inter-County Association. We have put this bill forward again. It was in front of us a couple years ago, as Representative Haas pointed out. We put it forward as part of the list of mandate reductions that we were requested by several of the leadership in the legislature to identify for this next session. Back in 1997, this provision was put into place that allowed us to charge a booking fee, but it did cap it at $10. And so we are seeking some relief from that cap. We have put, obviously, in the bill what we think is our first preference, is let us determine the actual cost of the booking fee. But certainly, I guess, Representative Haas pointed out, we're willing to certainly talk about different limitations with regards to it. There is a safety guard in place for this. If the individual is found to be innocent, they can collect that fee back if they want to. But again, there still is a cost to the process of doing booking. And so we're looking for ways that can help counties take on the significant mandates that they have. And this is just one of them. For full disclosure, so everybody knows, this provision is traveling in the Lanning Mandate Reduction Bill that actually just passed out of this actual committee room about half hour ago, when it was sent on to your local government taxes or property taxes division for its next step. So it is traveling on a separate track, and so certainly we want it in front of you so that you can give instructions as far as the public safety area, what is appropriate for this policy. Yeah, I stand for any questions.
Any questions? Can you just run through real quickly, which we've seen this bill before, but not everybody has. So just, you know, real quickly how this might actually play out in a county. someone gets picked up by the police. Just to run through the motions here.
Very simply, what happens is the individual, if they're picked up by the police and they'd be taking in, this would be a serious offense, not getting ticketed and sent back home. You are arrested for a serious offense. Let's just take a DWI, for example. You are seriously impaired. The sheriff arrests you, and you are going to be staying the night in the county jail. You're booked with the purpose of being held. Now, sometimes the individual can be picked up by somebody right away, but it's clear the intention of the officer is not going to let you back out in the street and drive away. In that situation, you're taken into the county jail. You meet a county booking agent or officer. They're an officer. There's an actual booking process that you go through. They have to identify all several parts of the law that requires them to do a whole list of things that we mandate at that point of booking. And one of the things that you allow us to do is say there is a $10 charge. At that stage, you reach into your pocket and pay the $10 for the process of the booking, you go on your way to your cell, and you're released in whatever time is appropriate under the law. This situation, if you are later found to be innocent, you can contact the sheriff's office and get that $10 back. If you don't have the $10 there, we still book you. Okay, we still let you stay in our county jail, and we'll still give you 3 square meals, and a clean sheets and a bed, but the sheriff, a booking agent then, passes on an email, usually, to the court saying the booking fee wasn't paid, please make that part of the sentence that they must pay the booking fee to the county if they're later found guilty.
Is this assumption, Haas, that you're actually going to save the county money through this process? And it seems like quite the...
In many counties, in many cities, in many schools, they will take their fees statements, what they charge fees for. And there's many, many things that they charge fees for. And they analyze what they should be charging for, what the taxpayers should have. And then that is done every year, or every 2 years, or every 3 years. So the fees, for the fees that a county can adjust, not all counties, but certainly the county I came from, and the city I came from, and the departments I have run, would go through those fees and determine, is it a proper fee? It might be even something that could be reduced or eliminated. And they look at it. They cannot look at the booking fee because the state controls that fee. They also control the criteria and the elements on the booking. Those have changed over the years. The booking amount has not. Since it was put in, it's been $10. In 205, we were asking for $25. For history's sake, the Senate put in $45 and passed it out in 2005.
And Mr. Chair, just another point too. You notice that the section of the statute is subdivision 1 of this particular section. There's a couple other sections here that require an individual to pay for their room and board in the county jail. So that's part of what can be assessed against them. And again, counties have discretion to determine what that room and board is. And so this is the one in this kind of set of fees that can be charged an individual staying in our facility that really is we think, arbitrarily capped. We think that the reimbursement would be clearly for that individual, that body who is sitting there doing the actual booking of that person. And so they cannot charge above that booking process, which is basically one individual sitting there taking in that information at the intake.
Mr. Haas, there's several questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. You are chairing this committee this session, and you're doing a relatively good job so far, Mr. Chairman. I do have one question, however. I'm looking at a document, and it's entitled House GOP Committee Brief, and we usually get these for bills before this committee, and it gives a summary, background, etc. It seems to list as proponents sheriff and opponents criminals. I'm just wondering if I'm just wondering if there were any criminals in the audience who would care to testify in opposition to the
right. My hand is thoroughly down on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, I think you and I should have a conversation about the confidentiality and propriety that we should treat our House GOP documents. But be that as it may, Representative Haas, you mentioned that in Stearns County there were 8,000 individuals booked last year.
2,000. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. You said 8,000. Representative Coles. I said in 2005, I said 8,000, and that wasn't a totally accurate number. I rounded it up. There were 7,981 in 2005. I haven't been around their county, so I don't know what it is now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Haas, that would be approximately $80,000 if they were charging $10 for each of these. Can you tell me what the cost is for the county?
Mr. Chair, I can tell you the exact amount that was taken in at that time. And it wasn't the maximum dollars. They took in $26,000 in booking fees in 2005. I think some of that was a book and release, which they can't charge for. And also, it's known in Stearns County that if a person is really coming off the street and doesn't have any money, they don't pile on. The sheriff doesn't pile on, and the court doesn't pile on. But that's not necessarily throughout the world.
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, I think maybe we should qualify on our House GOP committee brief. The opponents would be criminals with resources. If you're a criminal without resources, apparently it doesn't matter. But Representative Haas, I don't have a problem with the counties being able to try to recover some of their costs. I think as you've at least implicitly admitted, this is completely wide open and maybe a little bit too wide open. And so I'm going to stop now because I know you have other members who have questions, Mr. Chair. I think we should think long and hard about whether we just completely open this up and let Stearns County charge $25 and Carver County charge $85 and Coochin County charge $5, and whether that makes sense. It maybe does, it maybe doesn't, but we should have some further conversations. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If I move back to that seat, that would make me nervous also. And I don't think it's the correct approach. I think there should be an amount stated. And so, but I just allowed the bill to come to us and to us for the purposes of this discussion, and that MICA and the counties wanted it written this way. But I do recognize the downside of not having a maximum cap.
One more question. Maybe for Mr. Tuma or Representative Haas, can you help me? You know, we talk a lot about mandate relief, and I support mandate relief. I didn't support the bill this morning for another reason. But I certainly, if some of those provisions came out, I'd be thrilled to support the bill. How much of this is it fair to say is an unfunded mandate for our counties, and how much of it is just, you know, good government being provided by the county to keep its residents safe and enhance public safety? Is there a way to do that kind of calculation? Because I want to get rid of unfunded mandates, but if we're funding mandates, you know, that's a whole other conversation.
Representative Haas, I think that is an excellent question. This is a little harder one to determine on it because everybody loves the mandate, or it wouldn't get there. Almost every mandate gets to be a mandate because it's a good thing. The growth of the booking criteria has grown, and I don't think anybody would want to reduce it. I mean, but the state made that growth. They recommended that growth, and it was a good recommendation, but it was sent down to the county and said, you're just not going to take their name on a list on a legalized tablet paper and say, you know, that we've booked you now, goodbye, or you throw you in jail. They need all this information, and that whole list of information was expanded by the state. So the state increased the mandate. But in this case, I certainly wouldn't argue to reduce that because that information is needed to keep a safe environment.
Yeah. Mr. Lester.
Representative Hawes, how much of this increase of the mandate requirements, in your estimation, is due to booking criteria, and how much is related to increased number of mandatory booking crimes?
Representative Hawes, thank you very much. I need your question expanded because I don't understand.
We have
my lack of law knowledge, probably.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hawes, we have mandatory booking in statute, all felonies. I'm not sure if it's all gross misdemeanors, but it's certainly a healthy number of misdemeanors, too. For example, assault, DWIs, domestic assault, mandatory booking. And those tend to increase. Those change over time, and we add in new crimes from time to time. And I'm wondering if you know or if you've received information about to which the increased mandates is related, which of those two factors.
I do not know that, but our testifier may. Mr. Tuma.
You know, Mr. Chair and Representative West, that's a very good question. We couldn't answer that. We did have a sheriff that was supposed to come, but couldn't make it down. Last time we invited him, he got stuck in a snowstorm. He didn't want to come down. But that is the problem. And that's why the booking fee was put into place back in 97, was the significant amount of additional things we were asking for our officers to do at that moment of the book. And there are some critical things that we want. There are public safety issues. Are there orders of protection involved in this particular case? There's mental illness assessments kind of being done at these. These people need to be trained in those areas. So this is not a minor, small event that's happening. It's not like the old days where you come in, they book them, Dano, and it's done. It's a series of activities that we, from a public safety point of view, wanted our sheriffs to be doing for the safety of all of our public, so that we weren't letting a guy out that could be a danger to our folks. And so this is a very important event, and we want to get reimbursed for at least part of that.
Not of less.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tuma. And I'm wondering if you can tell me, or if Mr. Hawes can tell me, out of those 8,000 arrests, or 7,981, whatever it is, can you tell me, you said that very few, forget what was the phrase you used, it didn't result in a charge, but almost all of them were charged. My question is, though, how many of them did not result in a disposition that included jail time? So how many, either after the fact, whether they were charged or not, how many didn't receive a jail sentence as part of the ultimate? They could have been dismissed. They could have received a petty. Do you know that number?
Representative? I do not know that number. I looked in my 2005 bill file, and these numbers were there. That number was not. The area unique also to my district is that it's a party district, so it gets compounded for arresting a large number of students for illegal drinking or party drinking or noise drinking, and it takes that capacity up. And it also may take jail cells up where you have to empty jail cells out and take people over to another county. Representative Cornish would probably agree with me, or maybe would not disagree with me, but if I was going to work at the jail, the last place that I would want to work would be in the booking area, because it's probably the most dangerous and requires staff there other than just the person doing the finger pricking, because people are very agitated, irritated at the time of booking, and are probably the most dangerous and probably are most likely to act out. So it's an expensive and dangerous spot also for the sheriff's office.
Just if I may, Representative, comment, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate your efforts to answer that, Representative Hawes. I do have some concerns about this. You know, the reason why you book is to identify someone, so you ensure that you have the correct person in court next time. Booking can, in common practice, become a pseudo-punitive measure as well, as you stated, in a college town. And I've got a lot of colleges in St. Paul, which we deal with here, but there's a 36-hour rule that you can essentially put someone in jail with impunity without really having to be answerable to that, to a certain extent, except by civil charges. And so I do have some concerns, because, as you stated, people are agitated when they come in. And later on, for example, I think of this guy who got rammed by the state patrol squad out on Highway 61 and just won the settlement because she thought that he was drunk or something and he had his kids in the car, and he won a settlement against the state patrol for that. This guy comes in and he gets booked and he sees, oh, by the way, I'm getting charged for the booking as well. It can make things even worse. And I understand the reason that you're doing it. It's just, I'm really surprised that we have to go this direction even.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Haas, we've got several more people who have questions for you, and then I...
Well, let me get a quick response. Counties don't, this is an up to, even though it's a maximum that we would be establishing. They don't have to do this. They don't have to charge a booking fee if they don't want. I do recall from our 205 testimony that Hennepin County charged Minneapolis for booking in their jail. So it may be done differently. If your county doesn't want to charge this $10 or increase booking fee, they don't have to do this.
Representative Reba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tuma, what if the person comes in and is getting booked and has $100 in his wallet and he'd say, well, you need to pay this fee, it's $25 or whatever, and he says, no, I'm not going to pay. What happens then? Do they take the money out of his wallet?
Mr. Tuma.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would assume not. I think that would be an issue that would have to be brought up at the next level at the court, because you can send on if it's not paid. Not a shakedown, okay? You're not getting patted down. You're asked to pay that fee. We expect people at that stage to pay it. Not everybody does. As you can see from the numbers that Representative Haas did, the numbers don't always come. We're asking people to pay. And then it's sent on to the next level if you don't pay. It's sent on to the court where that is occurring. So no, we're not robbing people of their money. They're asked to pay a fee, just like anybody else would be asked to pay a fee. Now, is it a confrontational situation? It probably is, because these people have just been charged with a crime, and it can be an unpleasant place to be, as Representative Haas pointed out. But no, we're not, you know, saying, give me the $10, otherwise I'm going to not feed you today. It is, here's your $10 if you can pay that, otherwise we just pass it on to the court, sir.
Absolutely.
Oh, Mr. Chair, well, you know, Mr. Tuma, I appreciate that. I mean, there's actually nothing in the language that I see that says that, you know, it says it's payable immediately from any money then possessed by the person. And I get what you're saying. You're hoping they're not just going to take it. But as I understand booking, you know, everything comes out of your pocket and it gets taken away from you and logged in and stuff. And, you know, as you say, there is a coercive aspect to this, a highly coercive aspect to it that really troubles me. I mean, I think this is really, I don't like it now. I think this is a very unseemly thing for us to be doing. It's Big Brother in a way that really troubles me. Maybe because it's in a jail, we're already in a very coercive situation. And, you know, I just have to go back. There's an awful lot I could say about this. I'm not going to take the time. I'm going to let other people have a chance. But, you know, Representative Smith, going back to what the Republican caucus has to say about this, I hope the Republican caucus doesn't think that just because you're booked, you're guilty, because you know as well as I that that's just the very first stage, so the presumption of innocence is there at that point, so I wouldn't call anybody a criminal at that point, but if you have to be a criminal to be against this bill, then I'm guilty as charged.
I won't take your $10, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, is this a progressive fee or a regressive fee?
Representative Cornish. Mr. Chair and members, most of the people that come in this situation are unseemly people. I hate to say that, but 99% of them are going to be convicted, and they're using a public facility. You go into town to shop nowadays, you park in a ramp or a meter you have to pay, and they're using a public facility, and people aren't being put in jail to raise fees or punish them. The last thing an officer wants to do is tie up his or her time to put these people in and stand there and listen to expletives and body odor and drunken apes screaming at you, and so it's something we'd really like to avoid, and it's they're not changing anything here but the fee. The way that you take the money from the defendant, if you want to call him that, or the process you do, or a sign you use, or what time you take it from them, is not really addressed to you. It's just the fee. And I would suggest that a lot of times nowadays you pull an officer off the road for sometimes 2 to 3 hours on a DWI. And they're spending all that time when they could be out really fighting crime and other things going on. And so, and the cost that these local governments are taking up here in the booking procedure, you got to inventory their money very carefully. You get sued, you got to fill out a criminal sheet, and even if you release them, you're standing there with them for an hour, taking up your time and the public taxpayer dollars. So I think they should be able to charge these defendants probably twice that $10. Wouldn't even make up for the time lost and the public expense. We're not saying they're guilty, but they screwed up, or they wouldn't be there. There was probable cause to pick them up, or there was reasonable suspicion, probably probable cause, because they're probably going to be arrested at some time. And if they goof up and they use a public facility, they should have to pay for it. It doesn't mean they're terrible people, but they should pay their dues. So that's my comment.
Representative Eason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a couple of quick questions. First, how many sheriff's departments charge this now?
Mr. Chair, I think, Mr. Chairman and Representative Eastland, I have not heard anybody that doesn't at this stage. Hennepin County did not when we brought this up 2 years ago, but I knew after talking to Sheriff Stanek that they were going to institute that after they found out that they could charge it. So I think everybody, I think, does, to my knowledge, but I can certainly check. We have not surveyed our county. But I know all the counties, at least 13 I work for, indicated that they did when we did this.
Mr. Chair, I guess that's, so it is viewed as something that pretty much everybody does. Then I guess my concern would be along what Representative Coles brought up earlier, just to, in terms of not having a hard number in there. Because, I mean, the way it's written, it says to cover the costs incurred by the county. I mean, it's understandable that counties can have different costs. I mean, that's totally understandable to me, depending on how you manage this and the kind of people that you're booking. I mean, it's going to be different in different areas of the state. It's going to cost a different amount. Explain how that's determined to cover the costs. I mean, how is the county accountable to be able to document what the costs are?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Eastland, same way they do for the jail facilities. These sheriffs have managed these facilities for years. They understand the inputs that go into it. They're elected officials. They would determine what that is and go to their county boards and make that determination based on the inputs they think are appropriate. So this is not that complicated for them. They have obviously figured these things out in the past, where you can figure the shared time of a person sitting there doing booking during a day, but maybe they're not doing booking later. These are things they work on, and so I would trust the elected officials in your county commissioners and in your sheriffs to be doing the appropriate thing. That's, you know, our philosophy there. Again, we are open, you know, to some fair inflationary increase to this fee that's been locked into place for this long. But then again, remember, in 10, 15 years, we'll be back here again going, hey, this is not fair. But we're open to that. But I trust our county officials. They're elected. They have to stand in front of the same people we do and stand for these this activity. But
Mr. Chair, the quickest rule of thumb for calculating the individual cost, and not the only rule, is take what it costs to run your booking facility and divide it by the number of people you booked in that given year. I mean, that is a simple rule of thumb for calculating costs. It works if you have good middle bell curve statistics. It does not work out on the edges of that formula. So, but on areas where you have an immense amount of people to work with and good base, that is a good formula.
Okay, any closing comments? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Mr. Haas, any closing comments?
If you were going to put a number to this, in 2005 we had a $25 fee, and I think that would be a good case. I have no other closing comments. Thank you for hearing it.
Thank you, Mr. Tuma, Mr. Representative Haas. The chair, excuse me. The chair will lay over House File 1523 for possible inclusion in the Safety Finance Division Bill. Representative Hilty. Representative Hilty, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir.
We'll move House File 1809 for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Division Bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House File 1809 addresses a sort of a perennial issue regarding the calculation of per diem, the cost for prisoners within the Department of Corrections system. What the bill does simply is delete part of the statute regarding those calculations. If I be candidly, Mr. Chair and members, that the history of this issue kind of goes back to one person who was largely responsible for putting this calculation in statute, which I believe was intended to advance an agenda at the time. And I think that there have been concerns about the methods by which we do calculate the per diem ever since. The calculations are used often to compare costs of our system in Minnesota with other states, and also with the costs represented by private institutions that basically are competing for business. And the concern that I and a number of others have had is that there is no uniformity in the way that these calculations are made, so that quite often, because we include costs that other states or other institutions do not, it gives a rather skewed view of what our actual costs are comparatively. That's the context in which this bill is brought forward. Mr. Chair, I have with me this morning is Lisa Cornelius from the Department of Corrections that can give us the department's perspective on this and a little bit of the history and the way these calculations are made.
Ms. Cornelius, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lisa Cornelius. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Support Services. I have testified previously in front of this committee about the three different per diems we calculate. The one most problematic is the statutory per diem, specifically due to the reporting of the capital expenditures that are required to be in that per diem. The capital expenditures are solely based on money that was spent that fiscal year. It's not comparable to perhaps a private system who maybe would finance money. The state does finance, however, it is difficult to try to calculate that as bond rates are different every year. And I've even worked with the Department of Finance to ask how we might do that, and they thought that would be quite difficult in itself. So essentially, it is what is spent in a specific year, and that's added to the per diem. So that statutory per diem has moved up and down dramatically over the years, dependent on what we've spent in capital expenditures.
Very good. I asked Mr. Carter, our fiscal analyst, to give us a short notice. I asked him 5 minutes before the committee started. Just to give a brief overview of per diems for the committee, we've had, this has been a perennial debate here, and I'm sure it won't go away, but Mr. Carter, if you can just give us a little history.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. per diems, as we all know, can be very confusing. I think we experienced this last year when we heard jail per diems that ranged from, I think it was around $30 to over $100. Representative Coles then introduced a bill that would standardize the jail per diem. I sat in on some of those discussions at the Department of Corrections, and it took a long time, and I think they're still working on this, trying to standardize per diems. Now, I think Corrections also, they gave you a very interesting sheet, a very good sheet here explaining per diems. And I'm just going to give you a little history of this. Representative Hilty said, this started in the 90s, and it was basically because of a report that came out. It was from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, and that report ranked Minnesota as having the highest per diem in the nation compared to other states. So that was why, I think, one of the reasons why this per diem issue came out. The report it's a very interesting report. It also came out in June 2004, and the report does try to compare apples to apples. They're looking at the total per diem of the facilities, they're looking at the central office expenses, and they're also including the interest on the bond ratings. This report, Corrections, did improve in this one. I called the Bureau of Justice Statistics. They are also going to be coming out with another report next year that will be ranking all states. And, you know, I said there's no easy way to do this because we also get a survey from the National Conference of State Legislators. And they ask us for per diem information. And the per diem information they want is the facility per diem, but they also want the central office expenses. The Corrections Yearbook used to do per diem calculations, you know, where they compared every other state to, to amongst themselves. And basically what they found is that states were doing it differently. Some were including medical. Louisiana had their medical through with charity hospitals in New Orleans. So you couldn't compare apples to apples. But basically this one does. And I guess that's the little history of the per diem.
So, Mr. Carter, in your research of other states, then, do other states not include capital costs in their per diem totals?
You know, when Mr. Chair, when I researched this, when I called around, this was like 10 years ago, Alaska was including it. Now, we just called Wisconsin. Wisconsin, they don't even look at per diem. They just look at a general, the appropriation for the corrections, and they don't even consider per diem. So, I mean, it's all over the board.
Is there a question, Mr. Carter? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carter, when we get a fiscal note, say we increase or decrease beds in the DOC, what is that one based on?
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that's based on the marginal per diem. And I think Corrections handed out a sheet here. You know, the marginal per diem is just for adding the new bed. So in other words, it just includes the marginal costs, such as, you know, the health care, the food. They may not need more security. So it's a much lower per diem than the overall per diem is.
Representative Lieber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then, Mr. Carter, I mean, it sounds to me then we might actually be underestimating the cost of adding new beds, because I suppose at some point you get to a tipping point and you've got to build a new facility. So that sounds like that's not calculated in at all.
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Levy, it is, marginal per diem is used for most fiscal notes. But if we had to, say, close a prison, then you would be actually taking the operational costs, I think, which is, what, $89 right now instead of the $54. I mean, does that explain?
Is it this point, Representative Levy?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Carter, you mentioned one of the statistics you cited, the Corrections Yearbook.
Mm-hmm.
Can you have other prisoners sign that yearbook?
They're doing Facebook. Representative, is it to Mr. Carter? Because Representative Hilstrom has been on the list, but I'm just trying to get all the questions.
I'm sure he'll ask about the comments about it, but
okay.
By all means.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Carter, for that overview. Representative Hilstrom, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have been speaking with Representative Hilty. As most of you know, this is an issue that I've cared about very much, and many of the reports that have come from the Department of Corrections have not followed the statutory per diem that was required in statute, and so for a number of years I've been fighting to get them to report whatever the statutory per diem was, and finally this year I was excited to say that we actually had it in the report. One of the challenges that I found is that when they do a fiscal note, they do marginal per diem, but quite often when they're doing a report about how much they're saving, for example, with the boot camp, I noticed that they use the operational per diem, so it isn't even consistent across reports. I think that there is an argument to be made about the way we do capital expenditures. Representative Hilty and I have spoken about that. I do see that the way that we do report that is distorted currently because it does not have the ability to do depreciation over time. I don't think that the 65% for operational support should be taken out. And, Mr. Chair, I should have had an amendment today, and I apologize. Everybody was working on the Senate proposal that came out on Saturday, and so we don't. I didn't have an amendment today, but I'd like members to know that this is an area that I think we need to make certain that we do it consistently because we don't want people to tell us that we're cooking the books. We don't like the number that we're getting, so we're changing the numbers to make it fit. And so I just want members to know that I do care about this issue, and I hope that we can get some consistency in our reporting and maybe really seriously look at the capital expenditure piece.
As Representative Hilton said, we have had conversations about this, and due to time constraints, we weren't able to work out an amendment such as she referred to, but it is my intention if the bill is laid over and we have the opportunity to work on that, that we would collaborate and hopefully come to some agreement.
I'm confused about or have a question about why you're repealing section 241018, which was discussed earlier, which was Representative Cole's bill, which I thought was a good bill. What is the rationalization for removing that? We're speaking about your bill, Representative Cole. That Representative Hilty is trying to remove from the statute. I'll rephrase the question now that Representative Cole is here. I didn't know he was coming back, but he's repealing section 241.018, which required counties to develop a method to calculate the average per diem, which was something this committee has struggled with. This was mentioned earlier. So why would we do this? Ms. Cornelius.
Mr. Chair, as Mr. Carter mentioned, he had even gone to a couple of the meetings where the department has been working with the counties to develop a uniform method. And again, it's one of those issues that's very complicated because every county structure is not exactly the same. How they fund their operations and how it works is not exactly the same in every jurisdiction. So coming up with a consistent formula in order to do that has shown to be quite difficult.
And Ms. Cornelius, it can't be done, or is it just a difficult process to...
Mr. Chair, I believe they've been working on it for over a year, and they've yet to come to an agreement on what could be reported. And then there's also the requirement that the department report all the jail per diem. And we believe that it's valuable information. However, because of the difficulty of the counties not agreeing, then it's difficult for us to get them to give us the information if they don't agree with the methodology.
So the department supports the repeal of this provision?
Mr. Chair, correct.
Representative Bigham, did you want to... Representative Bigham.
Well, first, Representative Cole and I need a pair of sunglasses because of Representative Cornish's tie, but I have like a yellow reflection over here. This is, I think, as it's been stated, a perennial discussion, and although I haven't been here for that many years, it is, I think, a topic that's important. One thing else that I feel that we have to take a look at is this weekend I had the opportunity to go over the staffing. And I have to tell you, this was brought up a couple weeks ago in a hearing here, and I have to say I'm having a heck of a time differentiating between some of the titles, and I've asked for the job descriptions, which I'm sure will be helpful But I hope that as we proceed, this isn't really a question, but unless Ms. Cornelius wants to answer or make a comment, but there are some things like, you know, an accountant director versus an auditor, auditor principal, CFO and an agency CFO. I mean, there's just a lot of, I think, positions in here that I'm left confused about, not to mention what Reverend Cole brought up about the IT. So I hope as we go down this, and this does reflect the per diem. I mean, this is going to be reflected in a per diem. So I hope we can go through and talk a little bit more, too, from that aspect, Mr. Chair, as this proceeds down and we come to finalization on our budget.
Thank you, Mr. Bigham. Back to the bill, Mr. Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, Ms. Cornelius, you were talking about the difficulty, the swings in the capital costs, and it just occurred to me, you know, whether it would be possible to have some kind of an average, you know, take a three-year average when you do the calculation. I mean, it would seem to make more sense if it's a problem of variability. That could be taken care of in the formula. So I'd like you to think about that. You don't have to comment on it now, or maybe Representative Hilty would want to think about that. But the other comment I wanted to make, I thought I heard you say that when talking about Representative Cole's bill and getting the data for that, that the jails don't, some in the counties maybe don't want to cooperate sometimes when they don't agree with your methodology, what they're being asked to do. And I just want to comment that it seems like you're having the same problem with them that we're having with the DOC.
anyone else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm disappointed that the counties haven't been able to, and regional jails haven't been able to come to agreement as to how we should calculate per diem. I think that, you know, we had a number of hearings last year where we had counties coming in talking about their per diem rates and why we shouldn't compare them with their neighboring county, or why we should compare them with their neighboring county, and who's better and who's not better and who's cheaper and who's more expensive. And it's really, really challenging for us to make decisions around here if we don't have good information and reliable information. I'm a simple guy, and maybe you know, maybe I'm just too simple, but I gotta be honest. It floors me that we can't figure out a way to come up with an agreed-to method for determining per diem. Why can't the Department of Corrections, to start with, and then we can move it down to the jails, ask the question how much state taxpayer dollars are spent on corrections at our state facilities and divide that by the number of bed days at our state facilities. And I don't care if it's administrative costs, food costs, capital costs, whatever it is, it's taxpayer dollars, and we need to have an understanding as to what it's costing us per head. And similarly, there's got to be a way to do it at the county level. I we're clearly in a whole world of hurt from a budget perspective. I'm willing to take a look at whether holding off on doing some of these things right now is some minimal relief that we can provide not only to the department but to the counties. But I got to tell you, I just don't get it. And maybe it's because I'm too simple-minded, Mr. Chair, but it seems as though there ought to be a simple solution to this. And instead, I don't know if people are playing, you know, if people are concerned with what the numbers are going to show, if they include something or don't include something, or what's going on. But I want to know how much it costs us to incarcerate somebody at Facility X or across the board or whatever the case may be. But we've got all these different numbers from Department of Corrections. We get all kinds of different numbers from the counties, and I kind of throw up my hands and say, I don't know what, as a policymaker, as the person who has to vote on how much we're going to appropriate, I don't know how to make those decisions. And so, Representative Hilty, I don't know if this is the right way or not. It seems pretty darn vague to me. Maybe it is the right way. Maybe there is no better way. I'm disappointed we haven't been able to come up with something for the counties, and I'm going to kind of let that slide probably this year, Mr. Chair, because we've got a lot of other bigger issues from my perspective that our counties are going to be forced with, and instead of fighting over this. But I suspect that if I'm fortunate, and if you are all unfortunate enough to have me back here in 2 years, maybe we'll be having this discussion again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to keep this brief because I'm just trying to get a handle on what Representative Coles is saying, because I don't disagree with what he's saying. But are you looking to get one per diem number that might fit the entire state, or are you looking at different regions? How are you, what was your goal?
I'm sorry, Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Olin, you know, I think we could, I think there's good arguments as to why we should have a statewide number. I think if they wanted to break it down into judicial districts or some other way to calculate it, but, you know, it costs the taxpayers X number of dollars, and that's the administrative cost, the cost of the facility they're in, the medical costs, the education programming costs, the CD costs, you know, the food costs. It costs the taxpayers some amount of money. As a policymaker, I want to know how much that is, and I want to know how it compares from one locale to the other, because that's telling information from a policy perspective. If things up in your neck of the woods are being done a whole lot cheaper than they are in my area, I want to understand why that is. There's probably some good reasons as to why it is, but there may be some bad reasons as well. There may be some things that we can learn from the folks up in northern Minnesota down in the southwest metro.
Mr. Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that was the dilemma I had with that idea, because I know up in northern Minnesota, for whatever region, we don't charge exactly what some of the per diems I've heard coming out of this area, and I don't know the answer. But it's a dilemma trying to find one number, I'm afraid.
Okay, seeing no other questions, Representative Hilty, do you have any closing comments? Is there anyone who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Mr. Hilty, do you have any closing comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, only to reiterate what I said earlier, that I think it's appropriate that this issue is revisited, and as I said, I've had conversations with Chair Hellstrom about her concerns, and I will continue to work with her and with the department. Hopefully we can come to some conclusion here, some resolution that everyone feels more comfortable with.
Very good. Ms. Cornelius, Representative Hilty, thank you for your testimony. The chair moves. We'll lay House File 1809 over to be possibly included in the Public Safety Finance Omnibus Bill. If there's no further questions, this meeting is adjourned.